From TN Headquarters, this is The Jungle Cast.
Hello, welcome to The Jungle Cast. Today, we'll be looking at the debates. We've got debate news with the Republicans, obviously, and with the Democrats. North Korea's got a new time zone. All that and more coming up on The Jungle Cast. Now first, let's start off with the Democratic debates. So the Democrats, after not really saying anything about their debates, with all the attention really being focused in on the Republicans and their debates, especially the first debate on Fox News, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, the Democratic National Committee announced its debate schedule this week. So they will hold 6 sanctioned debates, and they'll be monthly, how they start in October. The first debate, as we said, will be in October, will be on CNN and take place in Nevada. Now, Democrats are holding 6 debates, which is less than the Republicans, who are holding 8. The Republicans will also be monthly, however, they start 2 months earlier, starting in August rather than October. The debate locations and the media partners have all been announced. The locations are also kind of interesting because the states are either early primary states, key battleground states, or both. So you'll have Iowa and New Hampshire both represented, and like this in Nevada, which is one of the first 4 top caucuses, well, first 4 primaries and caucuses. Nevada does have a caucus. Now, when it comes to media partners, you have CNN, CBS, NBC, ABC, Univision, The Washington Post, and PBS. The Congressional Black Caucus Institute will also be a partner, and they're co-partnering with NBC. So there, whereas with the Fox News, they made efforts to include more conservative outlets. And also some outlets like CNN and Fox News had more than one debate. With the Democrats, everyone each gets 1, and they included some other outlets such as Univision and the Washington Post, PBS, which are more outlets that are read and listened to by Democrats and liberals. And of course also the Congressional Black Caucus Institute going on there. Now, the criteria for this debate, or these debates, have been set by the National Party, the DNC, whereas for the Republicans, the criteria was set by the networks for the Republican debates. Although with the Republicans, was also the way with the criteria was there were 16 or 17 candidates, and they had to give it up to the network and see how they wanted to do that. Fox News took the approach of top 10 get the primetime debate, then the remaining get the earlier kiddie table debate, as it was called. CNN splitting it up, but both will be kind of in prime time. Now, the Democrats, like we said, National Party coming in, making that criteria. They must register at least 1% and at least 3 national polls in the 6 weeks before the debate. That could actually be trouble for former Governor Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island, who hovers right around 0 and 1%. Some polls he gets 0, some polls he gets 1%. If you look at the Real Clear Politics average, his average is actually 0.9%. And of course, right now, the other problem with Democrats is because there's so many fewer candidates and it's tended to be pretty consistent, there's a lot less national Democratic polling. So for a candidate like Lincoln Chafee, who's right around 0, he needs to make sure that he can get enough polls to put him over 1%. Otherwise, if he doesn't get into those debates, just be another blow to his campaign, which is, as you can tell, by being 0%, not doing so well. Now, 2 of Secretary Hillary Clinton's most prominent opponents, Senator Bernie Sanders and former Governor Martin O'Malley, Sanders of Vermont, O'Malley of Maryland, they've criticized the amount of debates. 6, not in addition to being less than the Republicans with their 8, it's a pretty sharp decline from the 26 debates in the 2008 Democratic nomination, or 7 years ago. Now, at this point in the 2008 cycle, which would be August of 2007, 7 debates had already been conducted. So by this point in the 2008 cycle, the Democrats have already had more debates than they will have in total this cycle. Now, Senator Sanders released a statement regarding the number of debates. We'll read the statement. Quote, "I am disappointed, but not surprised, by the debate schedule announced by the Democratic National Committee. At a time when many Americans are demoralized about politics and have given up on the political process, I think it's imperative that we have as many debates as possible, certainly more than 6. I look forward to working with the DNC to see if we can significantly expand the proposed debate schedule, end quote. Sanders, as you may remember, he's been pretty vocal about the need to have more debates, and he has actually proposed in the past having debates with more debates with Democrats and Republicans, because right now, the only time Democrats and Republicans have debates is when the two nominees come up and they have their debates for the general election. Sanders has proposed having more debates with Democrats and Republicans together in the primary process, which would open up to more candidates, and also, he says, would allow voters to see a contrast between the Democrats and the Republican parties, or their the two parties. Now, the O'Malley campaign, this is pretty interesting, because they've been very public about their displeasure. Whereas Sanders just released a statement, the O'Malley campaign has also been very active online. The emails were sent to supporters calling on them to tweet the DNC and use the hashtag #WeNeedDebate. If you look at the O'Malley campaign, especially their top staffers, they have all been tweeting about how more debates are needed. They're using the hashtag, and they've been tweeting journalists, activists, sometimes the @Democrats official account, all trying to raise awareness and be vocal about getting more debates. Because some of the criticism over this is, with so few debates, that it limits the candidates' free media, which we'll actually get into in a bit, but it also, the criticism is that it's supportive of Hillary Clinton, because Hillary Clinton right now is in the lead. Debates can have a great effect on the nomination process, as they show candidates relatively unscripted and on even platform. I mentioned before with the free media, candidates can challenge each other, and the debates have huge ratings, which is, like we said, free media. It doesn't matter how much fundraising you have, how many ad buys you have. For those few hours, the debates have this pretty much equalizing effect where everyone is on the stage together, and they all have an equal opportunity to present their views. So for candidates who aren't doing well in the polls, debates are great. For candidates who are in the lead, debates are a little more risky, because they need to kind of walk the line between being attacking their opponents, because you don't want to attack too much and be seen as punching down, and you also have to make sure you're still defending yourself and keep yourself in the lead. Because obviously when you're front-runner status, everything you do gets analyzed even more, that gets more nitpicky, so then it becomes harder to be in the lead and be in a debate. So front-runners don't want as many debates. Hillary Clinton has been happy, and the campaign has been happy about having the six debates. But those who are not doing as well as Secretary Clinton, the Sanders and the O'Malley campaign, obviously wanting more debates there. Now, the O'Malley campaign, we said, has been tweeting out at activists. The progressive group Move On, which is one of the biggest progressive groups, has also joined this fight, and its executive director, Ayo Scheinman, called on the DNC to go, back to the drawing board, end quote, when it comes to these debates. So Move On, which has been pretty supportive, a lot of their members would be with Sanders and O'Malley. Not as many Move On members would be supportive of Clinton, but just to kind of give you an idea of ideologically where Move On stands up. So this is kind of Move On. Yes, they're wanting more debates, but also for them, has more opportunities to get, in their view, a more progressive candidate out there. Now, the DNC has responded to O'Malley's online efforts as the O'Malley campaign has been very active. Holly Shulman, who's the National Press Secretary for the DNC, she responded to the O'Malley campaign's efforts in a statement to TKNN that read, quote, "We're thrilled to hear that Governor O'Malley is eager to participate in our debates. We believe that six debates will give plenty of opportunity for the candidates to be seen side by side. I'm sure that there will be lots of other forums for the candidates to make their case to voters, and that they will make the most out of every opportunity," end quote. Some key words there, lots of other forums. As we're seeing now with the DNC and also with the RNC, you may remember before, at the very beginning, I said the DNC announced six sanctioned debates. The DNC rules and the RNC rules when it comes to debates, when they are limiting them, what they said is that if you participate in an unsanctioned debate, then you wouldn't be allowed into the sanctioned debates. The sanctioned debates would most likely get higher ratings. And that's pretty much the incentive slash punishment for candidates and making sure that they stay in the limit of 8 to 1. Because in the past, there have been parties that have tried to keep a limit on the amount of debates, but then candidates end up just going to other ones or join other debates, and then once they join, they call in other candidates to join, and candidates don't want to miss on that free media, so they join in, and eventually it gets out of the control of the parties. So now what they've done is they've implemented that kind of punishment of saying, if you do any unsanctioned debates, you can't be in. However, the DNC, as has the RNC, has kind of given this loophole saying that you can participate in forums. Forums are different than debates. You can participate in a forum, and that would not get you punished. You would not be punished for participating in a forum. So we saw in New Hampshire, there was actually a forum that was sponsored by several of the early states' newspapers and broadcast on C-SPAN with the Voters First Forum. There were 14 candidates there, and they were part of that forum, and it didn't matter, really, that they're there. They still all were able to take part in the debate. Now, of course, we just mentioned the Republicans, and Thursday night, which would be yesterday when we're recording this, Friday, was the Republican debate on Fox News. So there's a lot we can talk about with this. First of all, we can talk about Donald Trump. Now, going in, the expectation was that this was going to be the Trump show, that Donald Trump, as he has been for the past few weeks, has kind of been sucking all the oxygen in the room, especially the media oxygen, and getting all the attention focused on him. Now, indeed, Donald Trump did use most of the airtime. However, what's also interesting is how little attention, in a way, was on Donald Trump. Donald Trump was not seen as the winner. When it came to the 9 p.m. debate, the winners are a little more split, but many people say that those who did better than expected would have been Governor John Kasich of Ohio. There's also been praise for Ted Cruz. Jeb Bush, some people have been saying he did well, he met expectations, but he still showed a heavy deal of restraint and lacked the passion that voters are looking for. So, Dr. Ben Carson has also been seen as being expectations. Now, at the kiddie table debate, as it's been called, the winner there has overwhelmingly been seen to be Carly Fiorina. People said that she was really shy in that time. She was calm, cool, and collected. She was combative when she needed to be and was willing to go and attack. So there was a lot of praise for her. And, of course, it would be interesting to see in the next few days when we start to have polling after the debate if she does actually get a jump, since the ratings were high for that one as well. But we'll get to the ratings in a moment. 9 p.m. one, no clear winner, although with online polls, Donald Trump has done very well for that. Of course, the problem with online polls is they're not scientific, so Donald Trump having more supporters than everyone else would give him an obvious lead when trying or in an online poll. Now, speaking times, we brought up how Donald Trump did speak a lot more. The speaking times that we found, and this is from Lauren Leatherby, and she posted this to Twitter, the speaking times that she has are Donald Trump with 10 minutes, 30 seconds, Bush, 8 minutes, 33 seconds, Governor Mike Huckabee, 6 minutes, 32 seconds, Dr. Ben Carson and Ted Cruz tied at 6 minutes and 28 seconds, Governor John Kasich, 6 minutes, 25 seconds, Rubio, 6 minutes, 22 seconds, Christie, 6 minutes, 3 seconds, Governor Scott Walker, 5 minutes, 43 seconds, and finally Senator Rand Paul, 4 minutes and 51 seconds. Now, Donald Trump, like we said, while it was not the Trump shows we were expecting, he did create quite a bit of fireworks, and that those fireworks have now led to a little bit of a war, with Donald Trump accusing Fox News of a war on Trump. So, the Fox News moderators were widely praised for their role in the Republican debate. Fox News, as you viewers probably know, does not tend to get that much praise from media circles or politicians, especially media circles. Fox News is seen as Republican and rightward leaning, so it doesn't tend to get that much praise because it's seen as having a bias. However, the three moderators, which would have been Megyn Kelly, Chris Wallace, and Brett Bauer, who are seen as three of the most independent anchors on the network. Chris Wallace is the Sunday show host, Fox News Sunday. He's seen with, or he's been praised actually quite a bit with his willingness to throw or to do some pretty harsh interrogations of people who appear on his program. Brett Bauer is one of the lead political anchors. He hosts the 6 p.m. special report with Brett Bauer. And then Megyn Kelly, one of the biggest stars at the network overall. And she hosts at 9 p.m. The Kelly File. Bauer and Kelly both do the political coverage when election cycles come around. But all three of them have been praised for their questions and their questioning because they really dug in, researched these candidates, and were able to effectively use some of their previous statements and positions against them, or at least bring them up. So Trump was on the receiving end of that questioning, and sometimes kind of they weren't easy questions that were always posed to Trump. And Trump has been complaining about that. He's been complaining on Twitter, as we'll see. But let's talk about the questions that he was actually posed. So at the beginning of the debate, the first question was asked by Bauer. He asked, quote, "Is there anyone on stage who is unwilling tonight to pledge your support to the eventual nominee of the Republican Party and pledge to not run as an independent, or excuse me, and pledge to not run an independent campaign against that person?" End quote. Donald Trump was the only one to raise his hand. And of course, he was booed for that, and Senator Rand Paul attacked him for not being willing to support the nominee. But Trump has complained about that question, saying that it unfairly targeted him. Trump, in the past few weeks, has been pretty open about his willingness to possibly run a third-party campaign if he says, or if he feels, that he was not treated politely or fairly by the Republican Party. Now, of course, the question is whether or not he'll run a third party if just because he wants to or just because he thinks he could win one. But what he said, at least in public, is that he would run a third party campaign if the Republican Party does not treat him kindly. Now, later, Megyn Kelly asked Trump about his treatment of women. She said to him, quote, "Mr. Trump, one of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that is not without its downsides, in particular when it comes to women. You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals," end quote. She also went on to talk about how he's talked about people on The Apprentice, how his Twitter account can sometimes be pretty angry towards women. And Trump interrupted her question and said, quote, "Only Rosie McDonald," end quote. Rosie McDonald, not very well liked by Republicans, so the applause and the laughter to his retort caused Kelly's response to get drowned out, because she then responded by saying, "For the record, it's not just Rosie O'Donnell." But the problem was with his kind of comedic line that really played well to the audience, she was kind of minimized and not able to get the question across. Now later, Chris Wallace asked Trump about the four bankruptcies that his company has gone through. Now, Donald Trump has been asked this question before because he is running his campaign as a businessman, and so journalists ask him about his business career. His company, the Trump Corporation, has gone through four bankruptcies. Wallace asked about those, and Trump used his typical response that bankruptcy laws in the United States can be effectively used as a business strategy since they allow the company to shed many of its previous obligations. Trump has said that that's a typical thing for business leaders to do, and he says that anytime you read about a smart business leader, they've done the same thing as him. So he tries to kind of deflate that criticism by saying, "I do it, other people do it, and we're smart to do it." Now, after the debate, Trump railed against Fox News. He also criticized Frank Luntz and his focus group that weighed in on the debate. The focus group that Luntz asked, which was made up of people who had not made up their mind and Ohioans, did not think very highly of Trump. As usual, the GOP frontrunner took to Twitter to criticize the media. He also retweeted praise of himself and criticism of Fox News, especially Megyn Kelly. And of course there, he's been getting into a little bit of controversy, but of Kelly, he said she, quote, "really bombed," end quote, and, quote, "was not very good or professional," end quote. Now, while attacking the media is often red meat to conservatives and that plays really well with the base, Trump could be playing with a little bit of fire here. Fox News is one of the most popular and most trusted news sources by conservatives, and Kelly is one of the network's most popular stars. So Trump is really attacking someone that most of the voters he's going after trust and quite well are in quite like. Now Donald Trump, it's pretty common for him to do some media criticism on Twitter, but he's been doing quite a bit of it recently, or this past day. So, like we said, he's been tweeting out praise of himself, posting poll results. We're looking at his Twitter account right now. They've got a poll from South Carolina that he just tweeted out, him being on, or Rick Santorum praising Donald Trump, him winning online polls, as we brought up, the Tampa Bay Times, apparently, their headline was Trump dominant. So he tweeted that. But we'll just read you some of the Fox News criticism. So today, he tweeted, and this is right around 5 o'clock, he tweeted, Fox News, you should be ashamed of yourself. I got you the highest debate ratings in your history, and you say nothing but bad. And he did dot, dot, dot. And the next tweet, he said, Dopey Charles Crutter, or he used Charles Crutter's Twitter account, should be fired. And then he said, the hatred that clown, Charles Krauthammer, has for me is unbelievable. Causes him to lie when many others say Trump easily won debate. Interesting right there that Trump refers himself in both the first person, has for me, and then later on refers himself in the third person when many others say Trump easily won debate. And he also brings up the ratings. So of course we can go to those. The ratings for this, huge. 24 million viewers for this GOP debate. It was the most watched cable program that was not sports. Now, to give you some kind of context, the Fox News on a regular night gets typically around 3 million viewers, 2 to 3 million viewers. This is significantly more than Fox News. It was the highest rated program for Fox News ever. And it's also, since it was the highest rated non-sports cable program, is the highest rated cable news program of all time. Now, for that, like I said, had 24 million viewers from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. And in the 25 to 54 demo, which is the demo that advertisers really look at, Fox News drew 7.9 million in that. So that's more, significantly more than they typically get in total viewers on a regular night. So just monster gains there. And of course, they say that the wave raises all boats. CNN actually did get a little bit of a bump afterwards at 11 o'clock, where over a million viewers tuned into Anderson Cooper to watch his post about debate analysis and post-debate program. But the Kelly File and Hannity both had several million viewers with their continuing coverage. So what we see is that many people, after debate, several million just turned out the TV or flipped to something else. But a lot did stay with Fox News, and some others went to CNN to get other coverage there. So huge ratings for this. And of course, the interesting thing to see will be what it's like for CNN, because they have the next debate. Fox News has had a lot of attention over theirs, because especially since theirs is the first debate, they've had this top 10, so people wanted to see how that came out, and that led to a lot of attention. Pretty much for the past several months, the question has always been, who's going to be in the top 10? Who's going to be in the top 10? CNN is doing a little bit differently, so it'll be a little bit less interest in that standpoint. But also, Fox News had the benefit of having Donald Trump center stage. People wanted to see what he'd be like in a debate. This is the first time he'd be in a political debate, so they wanted to see what he'd be like. And of course, now that we've seen what he's like, it's very well that some attention will go down. Although he was very combative, and people may like to see that. And so we'll be going on and watching this. People might just will continue to go and watch the September debate. Obviously, the September debate, that's a month, is a very long time in politics. It's unlikely that anyone would drop out right away, but we could have some changes. If Carla Fiorina does get a bump from her pretty great performance, she could very well be in the top 10. The there were three candidates that were right around each other: John Kasich, Chris Christie, and Rick Perry. Rick Perry did not make the 9 p.m. debate. He was in the 5 p.m. debate. But it's very possible that John Kasich could go up and maybe Rick Perry goes up and beats out Chris Christie. Maybe Rand Paul goes down a little bit. There's all kind of impact that this debate could have. Rand Paul, he's been a little criticized for how he came off as kind of angry. And of course, he got into a big fight with Chris Christie and he used the jab about Chris Christie having a hug with President Obama, which worked well at first, but then it kind of kept going back. And the problem was that Chris Christie, when he then kind of responded by saying, "I remember hugging the 9/11 victims," as he was talking about the 9/11 victims, at the same time, Rand Paul, and this is the split screen, rolled his eyes. So bad timing for Rand Paul there, rolling his eyes, where to the viewers it seems he's rolling his eyes as Chris Christie is talking about comforting 9/11 victims. So bad timing there, and we'll have to see what impact this debate has. Of course, the next poll that comes out will probably be include time before the debate, so it could be a little bit before we get polls that are entirely after the debate. But of course, once those come out, all the attention will be on them and seeing what impact this debate actually did have. Now, we've been talking a lot about time. Now, North Korea, they're doing some pretty interesting things with time. North Korea has announced that they're going to be creating their own time zone. So North Korea State News has announced that North Korea will set its clocks back 30 minutes, so to what they call Pyongyang time, on August 15th. Now, August 15th, there is significance on that date. Is the 70th anniversary of their liberation, as they would call it, from Japan. Now, you may be thinking, what does that have to do with it? Actually, quite a bit. When they reset it back a half hour, they turn it back a half hour, that will be the same time zone they used before they were colonized by Japan. So in some ways, it's kind of coming full circle as they shed off the Japanese influence, the Japanese colonization. They will now be using the same time zone they used before the Japanese colonization. And North Korea, or the state news agency, attacked Japan when their statement, or at least in their reporting, when they said, quote, "The wicked Japanese imperialists committed such unpardonable crimes as depriving Korea of even its standard time while mercilessly trampling down its land with 5,000-year-long history and culture and pursuing the unheard-of policy of obliterating the Korean nation," end quote. That coming from the North Korean state news agency. So there they kind of turn this back into a criticism of Japan, saying that Japan, when they took them over, changed the time, so now they're doing the great thing of turning it back. Now, North Korea does a lot of things their own way. That's the common nickname for North Korea is that they are the Hermit Kingdom, because they tend to just stay to their own. With the country being so tightly regulated and having such a tight government, so much propaganda, restraints on free media and free expression. Well, there is no free media, no free expression. It's almost kind of like they do just kind of live with their own little area. They tend to themselves. Unless there's some kind of remarks about them using nuclear weapons, they stay to their own, they focus inward, and they just kind of are there. So, like we said, they do things kind of their own way in several other ways. So, they actually have their own calendar. So, now they'll have their own time zone, and they'll have their own calendar. Whereas calendars today, 2015, the kind of count from the birth of Christ, or as the scientific calendars would say, Common Era, we would use CE, the Common Era, but they count from the birth of Christ, even though it doesn't really say that. North Korea counts from the birth of their founding leader, Kim Il-sung. And of course, you can make an argument that it's kind of their own kind of version, because the religion, or in North Korea, the founding leader, Kim Il-sung, and his whole founding family are seen as religious figures, larger than life, and I guess religious figure would be the best way of saying it. they're larger than life. So it doesn't really, it's not really a surprise that they would count from his birth rather than the birth of Christ. So he was born in 1912, which is known as Juche 1. So then we're currently in Juche 104. Now, this could cause some problems for North Korea, because they will be half an hour behind Tokyo and Seoul, which are right next to them, Tokyo being Japan, Seoul being their neighbor to the south, South Korea. And of course, the Unification Ministry spokesman for South Korea, Jong Joon-hee, said that this could cause some problems when he said, quote, some difficulties are likely to come in inter-Korean exchanges, including flows to and from the Kyosung industrial complex, end quote. So it could be problems for South Korea too, and then also problems for North Korea. Now, of course, kind of crazy dictators changing the time zone are nothing really new. The time zones are kind of seen in a way where it's time. Just think about that. That's time, and really no one controls that. But for a dictator, since they can control their time zones, it almost seems like they're controlling the time. So it's that, kind of like that propagandic thing where they can say, I control the time, this is the new time. And it's also, if they want to change it, they can, because there are legitimate reasons to change a time zone. In the past, time zones have been changed where sometimes the country you're trading the most with has a different time zone. So maybe you change your country's time zone a little bit to better accommodate that. So that way you're not working opposites with the country that's doing a lot of business with you. Then other times you have countries that do it for kind of crazy reasons. Hugo Chavez, who was the dictator or president of Venezuela before he passed away, he changed it. Now, he put it theirs back, also half an hour, made that permanent, and he said that they would do it, or he would do it, because then more people would wake up in the daylight. So, and at the time he said, quote, I don't care if they call me crazy, the new time will go ahead, end quote. But some people said that the main reason they did that was he'd be different than the United States, which Chavez and the United States had poor relations is probably still an understatement. But it also put them out of step with all their neighbors. So they can be kind of weird with that. And of course, in Venezuela, it was praised. The science and technology minister praised it, saying, I see it as a very positive thing that while there is light, we can be in it, end quote. And Chavez said, the best part about it would be for the kids. Because he said, quote, these children have to get up at 5 in the morning. They arrive at school dead tired. And why? Because of our time, end quote. So he's kind of saying, they'll wake up earlier because it's being a different time. And so now when they get to school, they have more energy because they're awake and it's better times. And of course, Chavez, being a dictator, made a whole bunch of changes to the country and the way they worked. So next, we come up, we got some more news here on the JungleCast. We've taken a look at that. The Daily Show. They're saying goodbye to Jon Stewart with their hashtag Jon Voyage. Thursday was the same night as the Republican debate, was his final show. We're taking a look at that.
The Daily Show with Jon Stewart has come to an end. Jon Stewart's final show was a celebration of his 16 years. The first segment yielded the return of every single of his correspondents, both current and previous. The segment also included a touching off-script tribute to Stewart by Stephen Colbert, the new host of The Late Show. Colbert was a correspondent on The Daily Show before having his own program on Comedy Central, The Colbert Report. There was also a series of clips from various people that Stewart had ridiculed over the years. They bid him farewell and showed pleasure in seeing him go. Senator John McCain was seen using a Jon Stewart puppet and having the puppet say deprecating statements. The second segment gave the audience a behind-the-scenes look at the crew and each job they complete to piece together the show each night. Stewart then gave a speech on handling bullshit. Bullshit. It's everywhere, he said. so if you smell something, say something. The show finished with Stewart's Moment of Zen, a live performance of Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, playing Land of Hopes and Dreams and Born to Run. Over the years, Stewart has made an impact on the political and media worlds. The late-night host was able to get CNN's Crossfire canceled after appearing on the show. During his appearance, he ripped into the show's hosts, Tucker Carlson and Paul Begala, for not providing adequate information to the American voter and simply treating the show as a theater piece presented as news. When Crossfire was later canceled, CNN's president cited Stewart and his appearance as part of the reasoning. One of Stewart's main targets throughout the years was Fox News. He regularly used the network's own clips against them, and one of his main pieces this week was targeted towards Fox News. In his penultimate program, Stewart lamented how Fox News had a major role in choosing the Republican candidates. The Republican debate was the same night as Stewart's last show. Stewart is also known for advocating for insurance for the first responders of 9/11. He began his first show after the attacks by asking, "Are you okay?" Any fool can blow something up. Any fool can destroy. But to see these guys, these firefighters and these policemen, and people from all over the country, literally with buckets, rebuilding, that's extraordinary. In the years since, he has been vocal about passing an insurance bill for the first responders. With his large platform, Stewart was able to bring attention to the bill, and it eventually passed. Stewart also used satire to go after Democrats and Republicans. One memorable moment was when Stewart challenged then-Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius, to go through the healthcare.gov process, while he downloaded every movie and see who finished first. After the show, Stewart is quite literally moving to a farm upstate. His family will be running a farm sanctuary where abused animals from farm factories can live out the rest of their lives happily. His wife, Tracy, has also written a book called Do Unto Animals, A Friendly Guide to How Animals Live and How We Can Make Their Lives Better. It is unknown what Stewart will be doing. It is possible he could continue his directing career or have a new television show. HBO and CNN have both indicated an interest in having him. For TKNN, I'm Timmy.
Thank you for that, Timmy. Now, we should point out that today, the jobs report was released for July. According to the Department of Bureau of Labor Statistics, part of the Department of Labor, the economy added 215,000 jobs in July. That is roughly what was expected for the month, and adding over 200,000 jobs is considered very solid for the economy. It is slightly less than we added in June, and if you look at May is one of the higher points for the year, and it was built up to May, and it's been down ever since then. However, it's still a really good number for the economy. Wage growth, however, still remains an issue for the economy, and because there's not that much growth. We should point out with the unemployment rate, it remains at 5.3%. When the unemployment rate remains at the same amount or grows, when even though jobs are added, that typically means more people are getting involved or getting into the job market, which then is reflected in the percentage-wise. So 5.3% is actually near full employment for the economy. So another good jobs report. Well, that wraps up this week's Jungle Cast. Be sure to join us every week here on the Jungle Cast and follow us on Twitter at TKNNPOLJungle. Remember, you can subscribe to our feed on iTunes and we're on Pocket Cast. Podcast works out really great if you're on Android or Windows phone. And then iTunes works if you've got a computer or if you've got a iPhone or iPod or iPad. But be sure to subscribe on there. Follow us on Twitter. Send us any comments, questions, feedback you've got. We always love hearing that. And until next week, for TKNN, I'm Tyler, wishing you good news and a good night.